Are you looking to live the abundant life no matter what your income is? You're in the right place. This is the podcast that will teach and inspire you to live better. Whether you want to earn more, save more, or improve your relationship with money or people, it's time for the 90 Days to Abundance podcast, brought to you by SavingsAngel.com. Here's your host, the Chief Executive Angel of SavingsAngel.com, Josh Elledge.
Well, if your family enjoys theme parks like my family enjoys theme parks, you're really going to enjoy today's episode of 90 Days to Abundance, where we help you save more money, help you earn more money, and help improve your relationship with money. Well, on today's program, I'm going to be talking with Lou Mongello of WDW Radio. Now, Lou has a new book about 102 ways to save money in preparing for your trip to Walt Disney World and how to save money at Walt Disney World, how to have more vacation for the money. And so without further ado, let's talk to Lou. Well, Lou Mongello, thank you so much for joining me on the 90 Days to Abundance podcast. And, you know, I'm actually really excited to talk with you for a number of reasons. First of all, we both love Disney. And so when we met originally at the local Fox affiliate here in Orlando, I was actually pretty excited when I bumped into you because I'd been listening to your podcast for quite some time. And I love the work that you do. And I think you're doing a great service to people who would love to experience more of the magic.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And yeah, we definitely sort of hit it off as soon as we met. I think that Disney connection sometimes brings people together. And I had actually never heard of what you did. And I was fascinated by what, you know, Savings Angel was. And definitely need to sort of take some of your advice along the way too.
Yeah, well, there's definitely some great overlap, which is why I was really anxious to invite you on the show because, you know, in those that are seeking after abundance, you know, sometimes we might look at something, an experience that we may consider to be slightly out of reach. And for some, Lou, that might be that Disney vacation. You know, they're living up in the Northwest or they're living in the Great Lakes region, and they think, oh my gosh, that's going to be a big trip. The hotels, the ticket price, the food. I don't know. I mean, can we swing that? And, you know, I have to say that it's probably one of the most effective commercials. I would say the second most effective commercial that Disney has ever done is the one where the couple is sitting at the computer and they're thinking and they're realizing we can do this. I'm sure you remember that commercial.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
And so Lou, what got you into becoming the expert of all things Disney? What is your origin story?
it's actually a very, very circuitous route to getting here. Sort of rewinding a number of years, I actually used to be a lawyer. I lived in New Jersey and I was a lawyer. So there's two things I don't want you to hold against me. I'm a recovering attorney. So I no longer am a lawyer, but I was a lawyer in New Jersey. I had an IT consulting business and always being in the service industry, I had this idea of making something once. So I had this idea of writing a book, and I wasn't smart enough to write about the law. I couldn't write about computers, and all I really knew about was Walt Disney World. I always was fascinated by Disney. I had been going with my family since November of 1971, and over time, I became more and more intrigued about not just what brought us back year after year, but what brought, you know, 30, 40 million people, and I learned everything I could. So I set out a personal challenge. Can I write a book about Disney and can I get it published? You know, can I be validated by having somebody publish my work? And long story longer, I eventually found a publisher, signed a 3-book deal, and I wrote the book that I wanted to read. I wrote a Walt Disney World trivia book, which came out in 2004. And when it showed up on Amazon and in Barnes & Noble, if you remember what bookstores used to be like, I thought that was it. That was sort of the end game for me. But I had this little brochure website. It was an intro page and an about page. And it turned into articles, which is what we called blog posts back in 2004. And then I started a discussion forum in mid-2004 when I saw there were people who wanted to talk about Disney. And when 29 people showed up that first night, I was like, oh my God, there's 29 other dorks sitting in their basement that love Disney's World as much as I do. And, you know, that community grew from 29 to 1,000 to 5,000 to 10,000 to 60,000. started podcasting in 2005, and it really sort of snowballed from there to additional products and podcasts and videos and events. And in 2007, I took the leap of faith. I sold everything I had in New Jersey and moved down to Florida, and I've been doing it full time ever since.
Wow. And so what was that transition like? Because I was kind of in a similar position with my family. We had sold our house, and we were renting, and we were living in Michigan at the time. We had come down here for spring break. And as we started looking around for a place to live, and I thought, well, gosh, you know, I work for myself. You know, I work from home. I guess I don't have to live here. I mean, I love my neighbors, I love my friends and family and so forth in the area, but if I could live anywhere in the country, why not Orlando, right? Why not in Disney's backyard?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and doing what we do, you know, it's a great time to be an entrepreneur where you can sort of work anywhere virtually from your laptop. You might as well escape the cold of Michigan and be in Disney's backyard.
Now, when you did move down, how did that influence your experience of Disney? Did it impact, let's say, the magic of that?
You know, the one thing, Josh, I'm really lucky about is that for me, there is still something very special about this place. And I think it's because, you know, there's a perception that I talk about Disney World for a living, so I must be there every day. I live like a mile behind the Magic Kingdom. I can see the fireworks, but I don't really go all the time. And I don't take my kids all the time too. So it's not like, oh, we got to go to Disney World again. There still is something special when I go, but your experience changes. And I'm sure you see this too. It no longer is about, you know, getting there and rushing to ride rides and see shows. It really is a place to hang out with your friends and spend time with your family and just sort of wander and walk around and eat and eat.
Yeah. You know, and one thing I noticed is that when we came down for our spring break vacation, you're absolutely right. I mean, we were rush. And when you take the time and you get to appreciate the immense detail that goes into these parks, I think, you know, you start doing things like looking for hidden Mickeys and that sort of thing. It really becomes just this amazing playground that you really can. It justifies having annual passes to keep on going time and time again. Would you say that that's the same for you?
Absolutely. And in the 9 years I've been podcasting, that really has been sort of the message of my show, is that you do need to slow down and take the time. And I want to really try and enhance their appreciation of the parks. So yes, it is about the great attractions and the food and the shows and the cast members and resorts, but there are so many more layers of the onion that so many guests run right by because they're trying to get, you know, to go see Anna and Elsa or get online for 5 hours as quickly as they can. And that's really what I try and bring to either the first time visitor or the person that's been there 100 times and thinks that they've seen it all. I still go and find details and stories and, again, deep, deep layers that make me really understand and appreciate that park so much more.
Yeah. You know, before we get into actually trip planning and so forth, which I'm really excited to talk to you about, what is going on in the parks with Frozen? Do you think that the parks, Disney parks, had no idea that this would become the number one animated film of all time?
I really don't think anybody saw this coming. You know, I think that they had obviously hoped that it was going to be a success. You know, Brave did very well, but nothing like to this level where, yes, guests are getting online and waiting to meet Anna and Elsa in Norway for 4 and 5 hours every single day. Like, you got to love your kids, man, to stand on that. Listen, I love my kids more than anything in the world, but I'll get a picture and paste it on your wall. But, you know, I think that's a testament to I thought the film was visually just breathtaking. Yeah. And obviously it's a story that Disney's been trying to retell for years. And I think, Josh, what really makes this film so wildly popular is the music. It's going back to that renaissance of Disney animation.
I'm sure you've put your theme park planner or theme park designer hat on, and you've probably looked at the parks and thought, now if I were in charge, where would I put more Frozen stuff? And, you know, I'm looking at, like, for example, you mentioned the music. You know, I'm looking at some productions like, you know, there's still a Beauty and the Beast musical production that they do, or, you know, let's get that out of there and let's get Frozen. And I can't imagine how popular that would be.
Yeah. And Disney, you know, obviously is obviously thinking the same thing, right? So they moved Anna and Elsa from their temporary location in Norway just this past week. They were moved over to the Princess Fairytale Hall in Magic Kingdom. Mm-hmm. So they have sort of a more permanent home there. They are part of the new Festival of Fantasy Parade. So there's a Frozen float that comes by. But you're right. You wonder, you know, the sustainability seems to be there, right? The music is still doing very well. The film is doing very well. The DVD is doing very well. Now you start saying, okay, is it time to maybe start swapping out a show? You know, there is time and expense that goes along with it. But I think Frozen may be that sort of lightning in the bottle that may have the sustainability of a Beauty and the Beast as well.
So, Lou, let's get into your book. And I took some time and I went through it. Lou, your new book, 102 Ways to Save Money For and at Walt Disney World. First of all, visually, it's beautiful. It is just visually just a gorgeous book. Did you take a lot of those photos? Or,
I really wish that I could take credit for the photos, but I can't. A friend of mine by the name of Cora Disbrow, who runs a website called the Disney Photography Blog, is a local Disney enthusiast. And he provided, you know, pretty much all of the pictures in there. And I'm very, very grateful because he does really make the book look the way it does.
Yeah, and outside of the photos, I mean, the artwork, the way that it's laid out, I like it because it's, you know, it's not a very gray, text-heavy book. I mean, it's visually, it's just fun to look at, and it's fun to go through with your kids. And I could just imagine, you know, sitting down with this book with my kids, you know, and I remember doing that in preparation for our trip down here for vacation. This would just be a great book to do that. What inspired you to write a book about saving money and making the trip to Disney?
It really came out of necessity, Josh, because in the almost 10 years that I've been doing this, I think the number one question far and away that I get from everybody is, you know, how do I save money? Whether it's their first time going or they hear that you talk about Disney or you love Disney, the first question I get is, well, how do I save money? You know, where should I stay? How do I get the best tickets? Where what's the way to get the best value for my dollar? So getting that question over and over again, I said, you know, I think this is something that I need to sort of put down and share, never thinking that it would end up being more than 100 different ways to do it. And then obviously the 40 free things that I have at the end too.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny because just to give testament to how popular those questions are as a consumer expert, you know, I'm always talking about, you know, money saving and that sort of thing. But when people find out I'm in Orlando and they're not in Orlando, it's amazing how quickly the conversation chart changes from saving money at the grocery store to saving money at Walt Disney World.
Absolutely. And it goes back to what you said before, right? There is sometimes that perception from people that, oh, Disney World, it's so expensive. There's no way I could ever go. And I know, like you, I want to try and show people that very much is not the case.
What is the budget that someone should plan on? Or how do they even, you know, try to figure out, well, how much do we need to save? I mean, how do we come up with those numbers?
And I'm going to give the lawyer answer because it really does depend. It depends on, you know, where are you coming from, right? Are you going to drive there? Or are you going to fly there? How long can you stay for? When can you travel? That's a really big thing. You know, I talk about in the book, I've sort of broken it down chronologically and logically in that I talk about ways to start saving before you even go and things to start thinking about and the fun of planning. So you are prepared when you go, but knowing when to go can save you literally thousands of dollars, right? If you can go in some of the off seasons, if you don't go in the middle of the summer or spring break or Christmas time, you could really save a significant amount of money. So going through the book like that will let you start to say, okay, this is what we need to spend possibly on hotels. This is what tickets might cost. Here are some ways we can save. We're budget for souvenirs. Can we go during free dining, right? Will free dining save us a lot of money as well? You know, Disney a couple of years ago was really trying to let people understand that, hey, for $1,500, a family of four can go and stay on property for, you know, 4 or 5 days, whatever it was, and still have a really, really good time. And I think that sort of helped put it into perspective for people that it's not going to be a $10,000 vacation every time you want to go.
So the answer is, you can, the sky is the limit. I mean, you could definitely create VIP experiences that are just out of this world, but you absolutely can make it happen. And I'd love to, I'd love to kind of look at maybe the major expense categories as well. And as I guess if I'm thinking about this, you know, in my head, I'm thinking, okay, well, there's going to be accommodations. Then there's going to be your theme park tickets. Then there'll be food and travel, actually getting there. And then maybe gifts. And do you think that's kind of the main five areas, or is there something else?
Yeah, I think that's really what you have to think about is resorts, tickets, dining, merchandise, and how you are going to get there too is something you have to obviously take into consideration.
Now, some of these, you've got some flexibility, and some of them, not as much. Would you agree? Like, for example, I'm looking at tickets or theme park admission, and there's not, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't see a whole lot of flexibility. I do get people who ask me, well, how do I get the cheapest tickets? And maybe, it's not necessarily my area of expertise, but I don't seem to have a lot of good answers for that. Do you?
Well, when people ask about tickets, they it's not really about, Josh, where you go to buy the tickets, right? That you're going to get the best deal. There are some quote unquote discount ticket brokers. Some are reputable. Oftentimes I tell people to stay away if you can. Don't go to eBay. Yeah. Don't go to Craigslist. Don't go to these roadside stands, because you will, without a doubt, get locked into a van to get a timeshare presentation for 6 hours. But that is a way to get tickets. You know, if you really need to do it, then that is a way. You're going to waste a whole day, but there is a way to do it. The trick with tickets, and there really is no trick, it's all about planning and deciding how you want to go, is, you know, I think now there was, you know, the news that Disney raised their ticket prices. It's now $100 a day. Like, oh my God, nobody can afford that. Well, that's not really true, because nobody really goes to the park for one park one day. The key is that the longer you stay, like the more you play, the more you will save. So the longer that you go, if you start saving, if you start going for, you know, 5, 6, 7 days, that number is cut in half. It's no longer $100 a day. It's maybe $40 a day or $50 a day. And there are lots of other ways to save on tickets as well, especially if you are an Orlando local, or if you're going to go to Disney World in a 365-day year. If you're going to go more than about 8 days or so, you really have to start considering to getting an annual pass. I think a lot of people overlook that option, but that annual pass is not only going to save you in the cost of your per-day ticket, it's going to save you on your hotel, because you get discounts on hotels, you get discounts on merchandise, you can get a Tables in Wonderland card, which will save you 20% on food and alcohol, you get save 10 to 50% on sports and recreation and spa and things like that. There's lots of other special events too. And now you also have an excuse to keep on going back. You're like, well, we already have our tickets, so we might as well go again.
I like that. So, you know, when we were originally planning our trip, when we came down, when, you know, we had kids now, so this was going to be their first experience of Disney. In order for us to swing it, you know, we were looking at, you know, can we stay on property? And gosh, it seemed like that there was a larger opportunity for savings for the accommodations that we needed. It seemed like that there was a very ample opportunity for savings if you stay off-site. And I know you do, you know, there's a trade-off there. And you look at possibly getting a vacation rental in the area. And we're very happy with that experience. But accommodations, what would you say are your biggest tips for saving money? And should you stay on property, or should you consider staying off property?
I think there are occasions where staying off property can make sense. You know, if you're going for 2 weeks and you've got 10 people in the tribe that you're bringing down with you, a vacation home rental is a great option. You have your own pool, you have your own kitchen and game room. And if you're going to spend a lot of time sort of at the house relaxing, but I think that you very much lose out on the Disney experience, right? The overall being inside, and I use this in the best possible way, the Disney bubble, and having the full experience with the theming and the amenities and the cast members and everything else that goes along with it. And you can save a lot of money. Again, it depends on how you want to vacation. Disney has a number of different levels of accommodations. There are value, moderate, deluxe, and then villas and things like that. Staying at a value resort can save you about $200 per night over maybe staying at a deluxe resort. If you do stay at one of these resorts too, you don't need to get a premium view, a savanna view, a pool a pool or water view because you might not be spending that much time, right? There's money you could be spending on other things or saving so you can have your trip. So sort of balance out how you're going to go. And again, there's lots of other benefits to staying on property. You have access to extra magic hours, free package pickup that deliver your packages right back to your resort. You can use all the free transportation. You don't even need to have a car. You could just sort of park the car, or if you fly there, the boats, buses, monorails will take you anywhere. And if you do need something bigger, they even have things like family suites. There's camping, right? You can bring your RV, you can bring your tag along and camp for like $50 to $60 per night. So there's a wide variety of options in terms of how much you want to spend and how much you don't want to spend on things like accommodations.
So if I'm a family of five, which resort would you recommend staying at? So, and budget is a major concern.
Yeah. So for a family of five, right? Most resorts say that you can fit a family of four in a room. I think the best option Disney has, and one of my favorites, is they actually have family suite options, both at All Star Music and Art of Disney's new resort, the Art of Animation Resort, which is incredibly well themed. So if you have five or six people, you don't have to now have two rooms and split up your parties. You've got a lot of extra space in there. So you do have sort of a mini kitchen so you can save on things like dining. You can buy food or bring it with you, have breakfast or snacks and things like that in the room. You've got a queen size bed, a double sleeper, two bathrooms. And it really gives you a little bit of extra space, a little bit more room to move around without having to get that second room. So Art of Animation Family Suite is a really big favorite of mine.
So obviously Art of Animation is a newer resort, but when were family suites first introduced? Because they weren't an option when we were originally looking.
Yeah, this is just in the past few years. They started testing it over at the All-Star Music Resorts. It did very, very well. So now at Art of Animation, I believe it is in the Little Mermaid section, has the family suites. Because it's sort of divided up into four different themed sections: Cars, Little Mermaid, and a couple others. I think Little Mermaid has the family suites in it.
You know, I would love to find out, you know, see the internals or kind of, I would have to imagine that their occupancy rates on those suites have to be really, really good.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a great way to sort of just be together as a family, and it's a great value too. And yes, they're doing very, very well. I wouldn't be surprised to see more of those coming up in the future.
You know, because again, the alternative is two rooms. I mean, you know, that doubles your accommodation prices. That's kind of a kick in the gut if you're trying to budget this.
Yeah. And if you have kids, they have, you know, their own room that they can sort of, you know, close the door to if they want to sort of be separate. So, and mom and dad can have their own bedroom too if the kids are up late playing in the living room or watching TV, whatever it is.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the resorts and accommodations in general. Certainly Universal Studios has invested heavily in this concept of family suites with the Cabana Bay.
Yeah, and you know, the thing I say all the time is it's a great time to be a theme park fan. Certainly as an Orlando local, it's great because as the quote-unquote competition continues between sort of the two major players in the area, and everyone is learning from the other and trying to bring out what's next. The people that benefit the most are us, right? We get not only better experiences, but they introduce things to help us save to sort of make it more attractive to go there as well. So I'm a big fan. You know, I'm a big fan of that.
So speaking of which, you know, I've been looking at what the parks have been introducing, and I haven't been paying a lot of attention to what Disney's been introducing over the past couple of years, because I think when Harry Potter came along, I think Universal Studios really, really upped their game. And it seems like that Universal Studios has been very, very aggressive with new attractions. So they've added that, they've added Transformers, they've added Despicable Me. They certainly expanded the Simpsons area, and now there's a whole new Harry Potter world that they're going to be opening. And then I look over at Disney, and I mean, I guess I see the Magic Kingdom expansion and the Seven Dwarves ride, but I guess, you know, for someone who likes thrilling attractions, I guess I just haven't been seeing it as much lately at Disney World, but I may be wrong. What do you think?
I don't even know what this Universal Studios thing is that you speak of. It's you know, it's like the Loch Ness Monster. I've heard of it, but I've never actually really seen it. No, I did go to Universal, and I've been in Orlando for, you know, coming on 4 years, and I've only really been to Universal once.
Wow.
I wanted to see. And look, Wizarding World is visually beautiful. It's very well done. You can see the influence that J.K. Rowling had in making sure it was as authentic. And I mean this in the best possible sense. It really does sort of come closest to what I think Disney has set for the standard in terms of theming and story and visuals. And yeah, you do hear a lot about sort of the expansion of Wizarding World and the Harry Potter thing. But you have to remember, too, Disney has, it's always in a state of change, right? So you might not hear about these gigantic, groundbreaking, you know, completely new worlds. But remember, Avatar Land or the World of Pandora was announced a couple of years ago. That plane is in flight. There's construction going on. That's going to open in 2016. It takes a long time and a lot of money to construct a completely new world that I think from what I'm understanding and my trust in the company is going to blow people away. You might not be an Avatar fan per se, but I think that when you see what this world of Pandora and the nighttime experiences and these bioluminescent, you know, plants and trees is going to bring to Animal Kingdom and making it really sort of a full day and evening experience, I think a lot of people are going to be very, very pleased and very surprised. Obviously, the Seven Dwarfs Mine Coaster, which is opening, as I look down at my watch, as if you could see me, within just probably a matter of a week or so, that is really the first big e-ticket attraction that Walt Disney World has opened, probably since going back to Splash Mountain, back in the early 90s. It is an attraction that I think is going to really appeal to people because unlike something like a Harry Potter and some of the other rides like a Transformer or a Mummy, it is very much going back to this idea that Walt wanted a family-friendly attraction that everybody can ride. It's going to have thrills. It's going to have high technology. It's going to have an interactive queue. It's got that classic storyline. It's visually stunning as we watch this mountain sort of grow out of the wet Florida dirt. and I think it's, and you know, visually you can walk around it in 360 degrees and it's just beautiful what Imagineering has done. So I'm looking forward to that. And I like a lot of the, you know, going back and sometimes there's little new things here and there, you know, that Disney adds as opposed to these one big gigantic new opening.
And you mentioned something about the interactive queues, and that's certainly something that we've seen over the past few years that Disney has incorporated. What else, for someone who hasn't been to Disney World in several years, what else should they look forward to seeing that's new?
You know, if you haven't been in years, you know, I could go on for hours about things. But I mean, even simple things like the addition of the new Magic Band, just the way that you go to the parks, the way that you go to attractions, the way you get things like fast passes and meet characters, it's becoming a much more interactive, personalized experience. You know, notwithstanding, you know, new attractions and new restaurants and all these different things that are opening up around you, just the way that you are vacationing in the parks is completely new. And for me, I'm a tech geek too, is very, very exciting. So if you haven't been in a couple of years, like even Magic Kingdom, New Fantasyland is still new. You know, the Enchanted Tales with Belle and Little Mermaid, and I think the Be Our Guest restaurant is not just delicious, but it is beautiful to look at too.
Okay, so you mentioned it, Magic Bands. I used to be able to really work the Fast Pass system. I mean, I had that down to a science. But that's all changed on us. And has it changed for the better?
I think it has. And I think the way you sort of phrase it, like you knew how to work this system. And for the people that knew how to use the Fast Pass system very, very well, it did. It very much worked in your benefit. If you didn't, if you were a first-time guest or were not very familiar with it, you know, we take a lot of these things for granted. Sometimes it was tougher for them to get a Fast Pass to see the attraction. So, again, Magic Bands is more than just Fast Pass, but by allowing people to sort of plan their Fast Passes in advance and get them when they're there and manage them on their device and change things around and move, it really is going to help distribute Fast Passes among all the guests, whether you're a day guest, whether you are a Disney expert or it's your first time there, everybody is going to have the opportunity to use the FastPass system well so that it's going to maximize your time in the parks. Remember, time is money. So the less time that you're spending waiting online or in a queue, whether it's interactive or not, you are saving money too, because it's going to allow you to do more things. And I think what we're seeing, Josh, is just a very, look, it's technically still in a testing phase, these Magic Bands and the FastPass system. We are seeing just the very, very early tip of the iceberg in terms of what these bands are going to do. Your experience is going to get better. It's going to get more interactive, and it's definitely going to get more personalized as time goes on.
Yeah, well, Disney has certainly doubled down on this system. And if I'm not mistaken, I understand they've invested, it's like $1 billion or something in this system. So they're planning on it working. So if I'm a guest and I'm planning my vacation, I mean, how does this work? How do I get the bands? I mean, what's the general idea?
So when you stay at a Walt Disney World resort and you start making your reservations, you'll have an opportunity to select the colors of the bands, and they come to you personalized. It'll be all your family will have their name on the inside of their band. And you'll be able to, and this is part of the fun, I think, Josh, is being able, your vacation starts before you get to the gates. So you're able to get online, sit down with your family, and plan out dining reservations, where you want to eat, you know, where you want to go. All right, we're going to be in Magic Kingdom on Monday. Let's choose our fast passes. All right, we want to go to Splash Mountain first, and maybe Space Mountain later. And then in the afternoon or in the evening, let's get a fast pass for the parade, whatever it might be. So planning is a lot of the fun. And then you've got your mobile device. You could manage it there. You can move things around and change things there, or get notifications when it's coming time for your fast pass. There's really a lot that you can do, and I think that it makes it a much more engaging. And as a parent, I like the fact that my kids can very much be involved with the planning process.
Yeah. And I'm sure they enjoy that as well. And I think that there are certain personality types that, you know, I think myself in particular, it's, you know, and maybe you might be like this as well, but the planning for the vacation can be just, it can sometimes be more fun than the vacation itself, just because of, you know, how deep you can get into this. I mean, I was breaking out the Excel spreadsheets. I mean, I was all of that stuff. I mean, I really, really love that. And I think Disney has done a very good job to empower people who like to plan with this.
I agree. And look, you can still just show up at the park and have a great time and get fast passes and things like that. But I think what they're doing too is making people and helping people to understand that you need to plan before you come here. If you've never been to Walt Disney World and say, all right, let's just get in the car and we'll go and we'll spend a week there and we'll figure it out when we get there, you are not going to have as magical of a time as you need to, because it is so big. It is so overwhelming. You do need to know before you go and plan ahead of time, not just in ways to save money, but to really sort of get the most out of your experience, because it can be kind of overwhelming to a certain degree when you get there.
And Lou, could you talk about touring plans for a second? And for example, if I show up at Epcot and I go, hey, what's that big giant ball? Let's go into that. Is there some wisdom to kind of hitting the rides in a specific order?
There is, and it depends on sort of how much you do want to plan. And there are sites, there's a touring plans website that does a very good job of helping you plan out your day to try and cram the most in that you possibly can. So for you, it's about, I need to hit every single attraction before I leave Epcot. That may be one of the ways you want to do it. It does take a lot of the, spur of the moment planning and saying, oh, big shiny thing over here, I'm going to go over there, out of the equation. There are some general guidelines, right? So hopefully you have your FastPass pluses ahead of time, so you're not having to run to get fast passes, but try and see first thing in the morning some of the big things, right? So if you get to Epcot, try and go see Soarin' first, because that's always one of the ones that has a longer wait throughout the day. Start figuring out, all right, this is what time the parade is. This is what time a show is that I want to see. And then kind of plan your day around that. You cannot do it all, right? And if you go in there knowing that you can't do it all and understanding that, it'll help you with the planning. Think about the things that you definitely need to see, and then sort of fill in the blanks with everything else. And look, leave yourself time to like just slow down and wander and people watch and grab a pretzel and a soda and just, you know, wander Animal Kingdom for an hour or two. And I promise you, you might not be hitting attractions on a map, but you will have an amazing time.
And Lou, you just mentioned a pretzel and a soda. Is that the extent of our food option? Here's a dumb question.
Yeah, that's pretty much all they have there. It's just pretzels and nuggets and, you know.
Talk about, I'd love to hear your take on dining in in the world? Oh. And, you know, is there a way to do that more cost effectively and still have great dining experiences?
No, how much time do you have? I mean, look at me. I am all about the food. Josh, attractions are just things you do in between eating at Walt Disney World. They're just ways to pass the time. I am big, and I get so frustrated when I hear people go, oh, God, I hate Disney World. There's something about burgers and hot dogs and chicken. And I will tell you that some of the best meals I've had anywhere, like on the planet, have been at Walt Disney World, you know, especially outside the theme parks. A number of the resorts, you know, California Grill and Blue Zoo and Sanaa and Boma. I mean, flavors and cultures from all over the world, and you really can have some exceptional meals and fine wines and great adult experiences or family experiences too. But there is a ton of ways to save too. And again, part of the planning as well, Disney has something called the Disney Dining Plan, which gives you the option of basically pre-purchasing a specific number of dining credits that you can use throughout your stay. That could save you maybe 30% up on your meals if you use it properly. But it also depends on how you use it. And is that the way that your family wants to eat? And I sort of outline the dining plan in detail with questions to see if it is right for you. Other ways to, and, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was like, other ways to save, you know, speaking of the dining plan, knowing when to go, there are actually times of the year when it's less crowded, it's a little bit cooler, and Disney actually offers free dining. So usually in the fall, you get the dining plan for free. There's no catch, no trick, no secret codes. It's part of Disney's special promotion. So you can save like literally more than $1,000 just on food by getting the free dining plan.
Which month is that?
It usually comes out in the fall. So, and a nice time too, right around Food and Wine Festival. So,
oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. How much money can you spend at Food and Wine? I am blown away. I mean, it's just such an incredible experience, but wow, you know, it's you could definitely go through some money if you're not careful.
I do it all in the name of research, Josh. It's not that I'm actually enjoying the food. I'm just doing it, you know, to sort of bring to the people. Listen, Food and Wine Festival, which runs, I mean, now it's like 47 days, you know, in the fall from late September through November, is the most wonderful time of the year. I know the holidays are great, but I love Food and Wine Festival. I enjoy my food, and there's, you know, 30 some odd marketplaces from around the world there. It's just amazing food and seminars and demonstrations and wines and beers. And yes, you could easily spend. Again, you need to plan there too, but you can easily spend a ton of money. But it is a blast. There's nothing better than walking around the promenade, you know, at dusk with some friends and a glass of wine and sampling some of the food.
So in regards to travel, Lou, and actually getting to Disney World, what are some ways to make, you know, if you're adding up the dollar amounts, I mean, is there a way to save money on airfare? I mean, should you just go ahead and do the car trip? And if so, and you're going to Disney World, how can you make a car trip across country more enjoyable?
We did. We lived in New Jersey and my mother didn't fly. So I'm going to make myself. We were literally the Griswolds. Like, Josh, we were in the back. We had no seatbelts on. We were reading books, playing the serial game and the license plate game. And I do talk about everything from flying to Disney and how, look, there are lots of ways to save money, even on your airfare. You know, don't just go to a website and just assume that that is the ticket cost. And I go through just checking other sites and knowing when to book and knowing when to travel. And be depending on how flexible you are, again, timing being everything, you can save a lot of money just by maybe switching your flight from, you know, a Monday to a Tuesday or from a Saturday to a Monday, whatever it might be. Even using other airports, you know, check into flying into Sanford. You could save a lot of money there too. And then there is sort of the idea of, all right, do I drive to Disney? Do I rent a car? Do I rent a car when I get there? Do I keep my car? And ways to save too on, if you are going to drive, you know, even things like, you know, knowing where to get gas around Walt Disney World. There are some places near where I live where it's about $3. You go closer to some of the more touristy areas, it's over $6 a gallon.
Oof. Yep. Yeah, they usually get railed on in our local media. It's a ripoff. And so you mentioned Sanford Airport. Can you make that work? I mean, will Disney shuttle you if you fly into Sanford, or is it Orlando International Airport only that Disney will come pick you up?
So right now they only do it from MCO. They only have the Magical Express service is only from MCO.
So in terms of when you get to the parks and the kids, you know, are enjoying the attractions, and you're going to see these amazing places to pop into that sell lots of merchandise. Disney sells merchandise, I hear.
Believe it or not, one or two things.
They decided that there might be some money in that. So what, you know, how do you plan for that? How do you budget for that? How do you know what that's going to cost?
I mean, I think you are really the guy for that too, because you do need to establish a budget before you go and stick to it, especially sometimes for us and for our kids, you know, because it's very easy, again, to see that the bright, shiny object before you get there. But sometimes, too, there are things you could do where if you shop before you shop before you go, you can save a couple hundred dollars. So, look, certainly things like the essentials, you know, batteries, memory cards, sunscreen, you know, diapers, baby food, things like that, ponchos. Please, it rains in Florida like every day. Go to your dollar store and buy a poncho. Go buy it for a dollar as opposed to the $9 ponchos that you may have to purchase for the 15 minutes that it's going to rain. There's options in terms of strollers. Do you rent a stroller? Do you buy a stroller? Do you have one here? Do you bring your own? Even simple things like autograph books. You buy an autograph book on property, it can be between $9 and $14. Here's if you have kids, before you go, go to the craft store, make one yourself, right? It not only becomes more personal and something that you can do together, but it's also going to save you money as well.
You know, one other thing that folks may not know is there are Disney dollars. And for the months leading up to our vacation, we use those Disney dollars as leverage to get stuff done. And at the same time, it was great because it absolutely gave the kids a budget. And so as we were strolling around and they say, Mom, I want this, you know, okay, well, how many Disney dollars do you have? You can buy anything you want. It's your money, but you know, that's what you have for gifts.
Right. And they're learning too. They're learning how to budget. They're learning like, okay, well, maybe I should wait a minute, not get the first thing I see as soon as I walk in, because there may be something a little bit later on. So, and it definitely does help. And the other thing too, and here's a secret thing a lot of people don't know, is depending on the time of year that you go and whatever might be going on, check your receipts. If you eat at a Walt Disney World restaurants, they sometimes have 10 to 20% discounts on merchandise at some of the stores in the park that you're in. So if you shop early in the day, you could save 20% on your merchandise. And if you're staying on property, they'll ship it back to your resort for free, so you don't have to worry about carrying it around all day.
Oh, wait a minute. Explain that a little bit more in detail. How do I save up to 20% on merchandise that way?
So let's say you go to the Magic Kingdom and you eat at the Plaza restaurant or Pecos Bill's early in the day. If you check your receipt, sometimes at the bottom, they'll have an offer saying that if you go and shop in the Emporium before 3 p.m., you can save 20% on all of your merchandise. So that,
hey, that's cool.
And it's great. And if you stay on property, you go, you do your shopping, and rather than lug your 77 bags of you know, plushes and Vinylmations around, they'll ship it for free back to your resort. So when you get back there later on that day or the next morning, your stuff will be right in the merchandise shop waiting for you to pick it up and bring it to your room.
Cool. And how about having your pictures taken? When you see the Disney photographers, should you just say, can you ask them to take a photo with your iPhone, or how does Disney's photo service work, and is there value in that?
Sure. So Disney has a Photo Pass Plus service where there are Photo Pass photographers, trained photographers with really nice cameras throughout the resort who will take pictures of your family or you, whatever it is, for free. The pictures are completely free. They'll now put it on your Magic Band, so you can go and either have them printed out before you leave, or go home and download them, or order a CD. You could actually pre-order a CD with all your pictures on it. So whether they take 200 or 2,000, you get them all. But if you want to just use your phone, they are more than happy to take it with your camera, with your phone, whatever it might be, certainly at no cost to you. So if you don't want to pay for the Disney pictures, it sometimes have a little bit of little magical touches and little flourishes on it too. They're happy to do that for you and help you out.
Outside, let's say you've got a 5-day ticket and you're going to be in Orlando for 7 days. What could you do on those 2 days that you don't have a ticket, but you still want to experience some Disney magic?
Believe it or not, there's a ton of free stuff that you can do throughout the parks, throughout the resorts. And that's actually one of the things I have at the end of the book. I have 43 free things you can do and see, yes, eat and collect. And that's one of the things I love telling people to do, is maybe don't get a ticket for every day that you're there. go to Downtown Disney, which is soon going to be Disney Springs. It's going to double in size. It's going to be beautiful when it's finished. Go to Disney's Boardwalk, especially in the evening. There's free entertainment. There's music. There's jugglers and magicians. Same thing with Downtown Disney. There's lots of free outdoor entertainment going on, a nice place to just sort of wander. Go check out the resorts. So many times I hear people say, I've never heard of Wilderness Lodge. I'm not staying there. I can't go to the beach club. I've never... Get on the monorail and go see the Polynesian and the Grand Floridian and the Contemporary, especially during the holidays. They're beautifully decorated. You can go over to Fort Wilderness at night. There's a free campfire sing-along with Chip and you can tell I'm hungry. See, it's always about the food. Chicken and Dale. It's with Chip and Dale. They have the family can go around the campfire. You can roast marshmallows and s'mores, and there's a movie there, and there's a sing-along. It's free to guests. They do a lot of those things at a lot of the resorts as well at night. You could take hula lessons. You can get storytelling at the Animal Kingdom Lodge. One of my favorite things of all to do, he is a true hidden treasure, is go over to Port Orleans Riverside Resort at night. Yeehaw Bob Jackson performs Wednesdays through Saturdays in a very fun, very family-friendly sing-along kind of thing. And there's food there and a great lounge. You can go to Disney World. Dare I say, you can go to Disney World without a ticket for a couple of days and still have a blast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned going to the resorts during the holidays. That is an annual tradition for my family and I.
Yeah. And I think, again, knowing when to go, you go during the holidays, you are getting such an incredible enhanced layer of entertainment just by way of the holiday decorations. There's no additional cost to experience what they have, like the Epcot storytellers and the Christmas parade and all the things they have throughout the resorts and the gingerbread houses and the storytelling. It's just phenomenal. I'm like you. I like sort of touring the resorts with my family and just checking out the holiday decorations.
Now, Disney also offers something called a bounce back. How does that work? And is that something to pay attention to?
Absolutely. So before you leave, you should, and if you know you're going to come back, and I think that's what ends up happening, like you get so sad that you're leaving. If you're staying at a resort, they sometimes give you what's called a bounce back offer, which means that if you book before you leave, you get a discount on a room only stay before you check out. Right. So you'll sort of get something in your room or they'll tell you or they'll call, leave a message and let you know. So if you book a bounce back offer, you can save about 45% on your room, on your rack rate for an upcoming trip. And again, that's where, maybe we should get an annual pass because we're going to come back again. We're going to save on tickets. We're going to save on the resort. And it gives you something to look forward to as well.
You know, that's so smart of Disney to offer that because, when are you most excited and most don't want that magic to end, toward the end of your vacation? Oh, we got to go back to the real world.
Yeah, your kids are crying. We didn't do anything. We've only been here for 7 days.
And Disney has, we didn't talk about, Disney has two water parks and miniature golf and we did mention Downtown Disney and Boardwalk. But are the water parks something that are worth putting in the vacation plan?
Oh yeah. I love Typhoon Lagoon and Blizzard Beach. They are, again, they sort of have that level of Disney theming to it. You can spend the whole day there. There's places to eat. You feel completely safe there. Sort of if you want to sit down and let your kids go on some of the things, there's kids areas and, there's the thrilling ones. There's like Humunga Cowabunga. If you want sort of a thrilling water park, they have those too. You can certainly spend a full day there. So you don't need a park ticket. And then at night you go to the Boardwalk or you go to Downtown Disney. You have a nice meal, whatever it may be. It's a really nice way to spend the day.
I'm wondering if you could talk about this concept. You talk about in your new book, 102 Ways to Save Money at Walt Disney World. You call it the diva. And what is a diva?
So in the way that we're talking about it, a Disney is something that is basically a Disney vacation saving account, right? Where the book really, and it's sort of a mouthful, but it's 102 ways to save for and at Walt Disney World, because you have to start thinking about saving before you go. And setting up that savings account, that specifically money that you are putting aside for your Disney vacation, is a great way to help you decide what your budget can be, right? Developing your own payment plan, things that you can do, sort of start getting ready for your trip and budget for it without doing silly things like, oh, I'm going to cash in my 401k so I can go to Disney World. You know, you, like I said, you are the guru when it comes to that. But those are things that you have to think about. And I have some of the other tips in there for things that you can do before you go and ways to save. Even things like a Disney Visa card will sort of help you. If you want to sort of have 0% vacation financing for 6 months, look into something like a Disney Visa. But there's lots of ways you can save really just for your Disney trip. And again, you integrate your kids. All right, kids, we're going to have a garage sale. What do you want to sell? And that money that you get is going to be part of your souvenir budget. You're going to help, you know, we're all going to have our own little piggy banks, whatever it might be, for upcoming Disney trip.
You know, I love this concept. And really, with enough forethought and enough preparation, you absolutely can have a $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 vacation, which in someone's mind might think, wow, I mean, that's really, you know, something pretty extravagant. But you can absolutely buy small changes over a set period of time. It's absolutely, Lou, in my experience, it's absolutely doable. I mean, you could even consider going on the Disney cruise and integrating that as part of your vacation as well. Have you ever been on the Disney cruise?
I have. I've been a number of times, and I absolutely love, I'm a huge fan of the Disney cruise. We actually do a group cruise with you know, members of the WW Radio audience, sort of my extended family. Last year, we were on the Disney Dream. We had about 500 people get together and just had such a blast. And the thing I like about the cruise, like Disney World, is it's not just for kids, right? A lot of people that come with us on the cruise are solo or they're adult couples because there's so much to do, because Disney does a great job of separating areas specifically for kids or for teens or for tweens and adults, but still has a lot of time and place that you can get together as a family. And they really balance that very, very well.
And there's enough to do in a cruise ship that, on the Disney cruise ship, that you won't get bored.
And I often don't get off at the islands other than Castaway Key. Like, I don't get off in Nassau. I would rather just enjoy the ship because there is that much to do.
Wow. Wow. That's very cool. Well, Lou, can you tell us about how listeners can get this new book? And again, I've gone through it. It is great. It is, I consider it the kind of the field guide, not only, it's a great field guide, but it's a book that you could get, download now. And I mean, it lays out the blueprint, I think, if very, very effectively for actually planning the trip and everything involved in getting ready for your Disney vacation. And then, you know, knowing these strategies ahead of time. So when you're in the park, you're not making dumb money decisions. I mean, you know, having that knowledge, you're ready to go and you're ready to have experiences that other people just won't have because you've done this research ahead of time. But how can folks get this great book?
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. I appreciate your kind words and sharing this with your audience. You can find the book directly over at Disney102.com. It's available in print from Amazon as well as Kindle, iBooks, Nook, Kobo, as well as a PDF that you can sort of put anywhere or read on your computer. You can also find everything else that I do, including the book, over at WDWradio.com.
Cool. And Luke, could you also, I love your podcast. Can you kind of explain what listeners will hear when they tune into your show?
Sure. I do a weekly audio podcast as well as I try and release a video every week and do a live broadcast every Wednesday night. But the podcast really is about what I said before, trying to enhance your Walt Disney World vacation experience. So I have everything from the first time visitor to the super hardcore Disney trivia nerd. I have everything from vacation planning to interviews to reviews to top 10 lists to listener email segments, just a little bit of everything across the board. So even if you're not planning a Walt Disney World vacation, I try and bring you a little bit of Disney magic wherever you are and sort of break out of the, you know, the snow or the cubicle sometimes, you know, when you can't get out to Disney as often as you'd like.
That's awesome. And at the toward the end of each of my programs, too, I also like to share maybe some free things that folks can sign away for, things that folks can download. Between your website and anything that Disney offers, what are some things that people can get for free?
So actually, in the books, I have 40 free things that you can do or get from Disney. My podcast is free. My videos are free. Pretty much everything I do is free. I do have some paid things. I do have books and virtual audio tours and things like that. But from Disney, one cool thing to do, you can get a free Walt Disney World Vacation Planning Disney DVD. So if you go to DisneyVacations.com, that DVD gives you basically a whole video tour of the resort. A cool thing to do and a nice surprise for your family is you can order free full color, like 14 by 20 inch keepsake maps that are customized with your family's name, and you get stickers to map your locations. You can go to customizedmaps.disney.go.com or just do a search on the website for it. Get those and start planning with your kids. You can actually frame them, like they're frameable to put up on your wall. There's actually, you know, there's a ton of different things that you can do and get a lot of great resources out there. Again, from audio to video, whatever it might be, a lot of things you can find everything that I do that's free, including a newsletter. And I have a free mobile app too for your iPhone or Android or Windows device.
Hey, that's terrific. And Lou, finally, I'll ask you the question that I ask all my guests, and that is, you know, either in the context of what you do for a living or your area of expertise, and that is, you know, vacation planning to Disney World. In your mind, what is abundance for you?
So when I hear the word, you know, a lot of different things go through my mind. You know, there's sort of that the abundance of, you know, you think of affluence or you think of wealth or an overabundance of things. For me, I think of abundance and maybe I think of success. And I think for me, I don't measure success or abundance in terms of dollars and cents. It's really in levels of happiness and happiness that you have and happiness that I think that you're able to give to other people. I am the happiest, luckiest, most blessed man on the planet because I get to share my passion for Disney with other people every single day. And hopefully if I make other people happy, if I sort of bring a little bit of abundance to their life with what I do and bring them some of the Disney magic that I enjoy so much, then I live a very abundant life and hopefully they do as well.
You know, one thing that I pick up from you from time to time is I feel like I your other listeners must absolutely have the same appreciation for this as well. When I listen to you, Lou, I feel like you know that what you are doing is you are fulfilling your purpose. And I think you know the creating happiness is probably a part of that purpose. Would you say that that's true?
That's very kind of you to say. I feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, I did it because I was a Disney fan first. I just wanted to sort of talk about something that I love and make people feel as though they were sitting around a table just talking about something that makes us all happy with somebody that, you know, that they consider a friend. And if in the process I've been able to make people happy along the way, then, like I said, that makes me a very lucky, very successful person.
And for our friends who are entrepreneurs or small business owners, Lou, can you do what you love? Can you do what you love and still earn a living?
Absolutely. I am very, very much involved in trying to inspire other people to do that. If you go to my personal website, loumongello.com, I do a lot of speaking to not just corporations and businesses and sort of mentoring and consulting with individuals, but I love going to schools and speaking at schools and letting kids know that you don't have to sort of follow that path that maybe we were taught as kids that you have to, and kids stay in school, but you don't have to sort of go to, you know, grammar school, high school, college, get a degree, and then get your 9-to-5 job that you hate every day and you just can't wait for nights and weekends to do what you love. No, you can do what, look, you're a perfect example, Josh. You do what you love and are passionate about every single day. And you know what? You make money on it, and it's okay to make money doing what you love. You know, and I think that's the key to success is doing what you love every day. And in 2014, there's no better time to be able to do that. We have tools and opportunity and resources at our fingertips to do it. So do what you love.
Lou, thank you so much for spending your time with us.
Josh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate you having me come on. I love what you do. My wife is a huge fan of Savings Angel. When I told her that I met you a couple of years ago over at Fox. So keep doing what you're doing because you too are helping a lot of people as well.
Awesome. Thanks, Lou.
Thank you.
I want to thank my friend Lou Mongello of WDWRadio.com for coming on today's show for 90 Days to Abundance. If you enjoyed what you heard, you can get all of the show notes, everything we talked about at my website. That's savingsangel.com. Now, when you get there, you just want to click on podcast, and then you want to click on show number 22, where we've got links to Lou's website, links to Lou's book, and Lou's podcast. podcast. And it'll be a great one to add to your favorites as well. And as always, if you enjoyed today's program or you enjoy any of my programs of 90 Days to Abundance, feel free to subscribe in iTunes or Stitcher or anywhere else that you listen to this podcast. And also, I thrive upon every positive review that you could possibly muster a minute or so to leave in iTunes. It just means the world to me. And this month, in the month of May, every positive review is entered in for a drawing. And at the end of the month, we're going to be giving away a $200 e-course. And that e-course is my full 90 Days to Abundance program, where you can learn how to save money, earn more money, and truly live an abundant life. And for more details on that, just go to savingsangel.com and scroll to the bottom where you can learn all about 90 Days to Abundance. And again, all you have to do is just leave a positive review on iTunes and you'll be entered to win that. And with that, my friends, thank you so much for enjoying this episode of 90 Days to Abundance with me as we chatted with Lou. And I want you to have a great weekend. And as always, live abundantly. Let it go. Let it go. No, just kidding. I'm not doing that.